The Mississippi River dumped sand, dead plants, and other precursors of recoverable fossil fuels into the Gulf of Mexico over millions of years. Freshwater delta flows sometimes produced pressurized traps of oil and gas offshore, as was the case off the Niger Delta in West Africa. The Gulf of Mexico's salt domes held fossil fuels, as it turned out, as a result of many of the same ancient geological processes that had endowed onshore Louisiana and East Texas with oil riches. Early American oil geologists did not take long to follow the oil trail from Texas into the Gulf. Prospectors drilled the Gulf's first offshore well in 1938. The returns proved compelling. Oil exploration in shallow Gulf waters delivered high rates of success. New wells struck oil twice as often as on Texas or Louisiana lands, and the volumes uncovered were often much greater. For a while, the only wells that made technical and economic sense were those that could be drilled in waters shallow enough to support a drilling platform anchored by pilings in the seabed. Profits incentivized innovation. In 1962, Royal Dutch Shell announced that it had invented a floating drilling contraption that would allow oil exploration in waters too deep to support a traditional platform. The deepwater oil era began, and it too boomed. Floating platforms spread from the Gulf to the Pacific Ocean and Alaska. Production from the Gulf of Mexico alone soared from 348,000 barrels per day in the year of Shell's announcement to 915,000 barrels by 1968, almost 10% of America's domestic total. On January 28, 1969, Union Oil Platform A-21 blew out in the Santa Barbara Channel. The spill soaked 30 miles of California beaches in oil. It was the early age of color television and dramatic visual news, moon landings, Vietnam jungle firefights, and televised presidential debates. Images of dead seagulls coated in oil and California beach enthusiasts mucking in tar beamed across national newscasts night after night, adding momentum to America's burgeoning environmental movement. President Richard Nixon's Secretary of the Interior, Walter Hickel, imposed a moratorium on all drilling and production in California waters. That decision initiated what became an undeclared ad hoc system for controlling offshore drilling in American waters. If the waters to be leased for risky oil drilling adjoined states with tourism-dependent economies or voters who supported tight environmental regulation, drilling would be banned. But if the waters adjoined states with pro-oil politics, such as Texas and Louisiana, offshore drilling would be permitted and even encouraged. Alaska, with its gung-ho pro-oil politics and its vast stretches of protected public lands and waterways, was a special political case. Some offshore leasing proceeded there, but it was often contested. Under a federal law enacted in 1953, individual states own and manage resources beneath ocean waters for 3 nautical miles from the shore, although Florida and Texas own 9 nautical miles worth because of old treaty claims. The federal government owns and manages the rest of America's territorial waters through the Department of the Interior. Even President Ronald Reagan, who was elected with a sweeping mandate to deregulate industry and spur economic growth, could not overcome America's strangely balkanized politics of offshore oil drilling. Reagan's Secretary of the Interior, James Watt, initiated ambitious plans to lease oil in all of America's oceans, but in the end, aggressive drilling went forward only in the waters off Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. The eco-minded West Coast states of California, Oregon, and Washington wanted no part. Florida's tourism and coastal real estate industries could not abide the risks of a Santa Barbara-scale spill, even though the state's voters sometimes leaned Republican. Thus, even Governor Jeb Bush, a scion of oil, would not oppose offshore drilling for a time. On the Atlantic coast, Virginia, North Carolina, and New Jersey occasionally flirted with leasing Atlantic Ocean tracts for oil drilling in exchange for royalty revenue, but none of these states ever produced governors and political constituencies decisive enough to go ahead. After the Deepwater Horizon blowout, it became commonplace to observe that big oil had captured and weakened Washington's regulation of offshore drilling by influencing and outfoxing the weak and underfunded unit of the Department of the Interior, the Minerals Management Service, or MMS, which oversaw leasing and drilling in federal waters. It was certainly true that the oil industry outmatched MMS regulators, and that the industry muscled through an oversight system that relied heavily on self-regulation. But the weak regulatory system was also a consequence of the unusual segregated American politics of offshore drilling. The most powerful national environmental lobbies, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Environmental Defense Fund, the Nature Conservancy, and the Sierra Club, did not focus heavily on the technical, regulatory, and risk management issues surrounding these red state deepwater drilling operations. To the extent that the environmental lobbies worked on offshore oil issues, they focused more on preventing new leasing in Alaska or in the Eastern Gulf off of Florida, where the oil industry continuously sought to expand. Also, as drilling boomed, Interior became the conduit for annual royalties that reached $23 billion in 2008, $17.3 billion of which was funneled to the deficit-burdened United States Treasury. This cash flow reinforced congressional complacency. Besides, in most years, shipping accidents accounted for much more oil pollution leaching into ocean waters than offshore drilling or associated pipeline leaks. All this created a pressure-free atmosphere around Interior's Minerals Management Service. Compared with food safety, toy safety, mountaintop coal mining, climate change, air quality, or water quality, the rigors of deep-water drilling operations and worker safety in the western and central Gulf of Mexico did not attract great scrutiny, as evidenced by the extraordinary numbers of deaths and injuries that took place on offshore platforms.